Welcome to the Contact Center Expert Show. This show is hosted by Nancy Monroe, CEO of Verbal Transactions, a voice enablement technology company. Join our discussion on how you can make your contact center a well-oiled machine.
All right, here we are. Happy New Year, everyone. And yes, everyone in our audience is still being safe, socially distanced. The very enthusiastic, as you can hear. So, and I am too, because our guest today is a great way to kick off, hopefully, got to be better than last year. So our guest today is a former director of CX for HP, currently an independent CX consultant whose approach is the marrying of insights from the voice of the customer with action via process engineering. He's a Lean Six Sigma Black Belt, a certified Scrum Master, and a certified customer experience professional by the CXPA, and a recovering PMP. We won't hold that against him. He's a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force Reserves, where he serves as an assistant professor of statistics at the U.S. Air Force Academy. His consulting experience ranges from tech to the energy industry, insurance, and startups, as well as civic organizations. He's all over LinkedIn, writing, hosting, and moderating webinars, and engaging with other customer experience professionals. His new book is coming out later this year, outlining a comprehensive approach to developing a CX function within your organization. So please welcome Nicholas Zeisler. Well, hello.
Thank you, Nancy. How are you? Happy New Year to you. I'm glad to
be
here.
Yeah, yes. No, it's definitely starting off with a bang, you know, and looking forward to lots of great things happening in the CX space this year. I think one of the things that we all learned is that we can successfully maintain our distance and get the job done.
Yeah, everybody's at home now.
yeah. But, you know, when you and I had talked previously, you know, I was really fascinated by the fact that in the past when I've called up CX professionals and explained to them I have this really cool simulation platform that helps onboard customer service agents faster, you know, they're all like, oh, well, that's training. That's not my job, you know. And I really scratched my head to say, well, isn't it part of your you know, the total customer journey involves, you know, sometimes the only people that interact with customers. And, you know, you have a really interesting perspective on, you know, how organizations should view CX. So maybe you can kind of share with our audience, you know, how you feel that it's not just one piece of the puzzle. It touches many points within the organization.
Yeah, absolutely, Nancy. You know, I think a lot of folks will fall one way or the other on one or the other extreme when it comes to CX, you know. And I'll talk to business leaders and business owners who say, oh, well, we're all about customer experience, and so it's the kitchen sink. It's just throw everything at it. We love our customers. The customers are the greatest. The customers are most important to us. They're at the center of everything we do, or they're at the absolute top. You know, they'll draw out the org chart and put the customer at the top, you know, and all that sort of thing. And it's like, okay, well, what does that mean, right? And when it means so much, sometimes it really doesn't mean anything. And people don't recognize all the investment of energy and effort and resources and time and thought that goes into that. But nevertheless, they think that the answer to good CX is making absolutely every interaction with your customer the most fabulous and over-the-top experience that they'll remember for their lifetime. Well, it doesn't necessarily need to be just like that. You just need to make sure that all those interactions with your customers are reflective of what your brand promise is to your customers. And then some people see it the other way, and they incredibly minimize what CX is, and they think, yeah, well, we take surveys. Like, okay, what are you doing with those surveys? And it's like, well, we put up the results up on the dashboard there every week. Like, okay,
oh, yeah.
And what are you doing with it, right? And so there's this broad mistake that a lot of organizations will make when they say, okay, well, we're going to either do everything and throw everything at it, or we're just going to take surveys and figure that's good for the day.
Yeah. No, you're right. You know, and with your background in statistics, I bet you just say, okay, well, that's all well and good, but, you know, let's look at the facts kind of thing, you know. And I would think all the data tools out there today, you know, you can arm yourself pretty well with a lot of things to help them see really where those gaps are.
Yeah, you bet. Well, the sort of insights that you provide, for example, with verbal transactions. Obviously, it's great to get that insight. But then the other thing is, and this is that second part of the marriage between insights from the VOC and then taking action, is you got to do something with it, because otherwise, like I say, CX, VOC becomes a lot like the weather in that, you know, it certainly impacts you and it's certainly out there and everybody talks about it, but nobody does anything about it. And so it's well and good to have the best of intentions and the best of insights, but if you're not actually doing something with the insights and the feedback that you're getting from your customers, then it's all a complete waste of resources, and it's also kind of insulting to your customers. Ask them what they think, take their feedback, and then go, okay, great, thanks. Bye-bye. And you don't do anything with it, well, thanks for nothing, you know?
What's the point? Yeah. Can you, do you have like an example of somebody that you've worked with, or an organization, or when you're at HP, or one of your customers that you've worked with where you did kind of help them see what the data was and then how they acted upon it?
Oh, yeah. Well, that was actually one of the reasons that I was brought into HP. And in fact, that's how I got involved in CX in the first place. I am a process engineer, Lean Six Sigma operations research and so forth, going way back all the way into my earlier military career. And it was that experience that I had that caused my boss at the time, or my soon-to-be boss at the time, if I can, I don't know what tense that is to say, but the reason they reached out to me was they said, Z, you know, you've got this experience in actually doing things with the insights that you have. And Lean Six Sigma, process improvement, process engineering, these sorts of things normally come into a corporate environment by way of, hey, we've got a lot of waste, we've got a lot of resources that we're not using efficiently, right? We could save some money and save some energy and effort if we leaned out and streamlined our processes and did things in a wiser way. That kind of historically is where Six Sigma and Lean and all these types of improvement processes come from in the first place. So I get the call. I had worked at HP previously, and I got a call from the VP of Customer Support and Service, and he said, we want to bring you on, and we want to leverage those skills, but we want to do it with a slightly different from a slightly different perspective. Rather than simply saving money, rather than simply saving resources, we actually want to improve the bottom line of our customers' experiences. So the KPI wasn't necessarily, hey, how much money did we save? You know, how many fewer people does it take to do this process or whatever the underlying KPI, the ball we were trying to move was what was our customers' experiences. I thought that is such a brilliant use for these tools that have been around for so long. And it's really inspiring, because it's a lot easier also to get an organization to kind of rally behind, hey, we're going to do all this stuff so that our customers have a better experience. Whereas, process engineering and Lean and Six Sigma unfortunately have a very bad reputation in some organizations that people will use these sorts of things so that they can, find what they'll call efficiencies in the workforce. Kind of run yelling and screaming away from that. But here the goal wasn't so much, hey, we're going to save money. And that's another beautiful thing about it, Nancy, is that you'll save money anyway because you will be streamlining things and you will be improving your processes. But that's kind of a secondary nice thing in addition to, by the way, better satisfying your customers and better meeting their needs.
You know, and that's especially during – I think COVID is kind of – I would say has accelerated some organizations in kind of assessing those ways of creating efficiencies. Have you seen anything recently that – you know, it was like, oh, why didn't we do this before COVID kind of thing?
Yeah, it's interesting. And the thing about being in the customer experience world is you go through your daily interactions with brands, with service providers, and with people who, produce products and goods and so forth that you use, and you take a different perspective. And that's certainly something that I noticed as we were kind of, go back 10 months or whatever, back when March and April were starting to get really weird, and you started seeing here, and this I think is the most glaring example of it. We started to see commercials, and I think this commercial was for I think it was Microsoft Teams or something like that, one of these, online meeting platforms like Zoom or whatever. And it was centered around the healthcare industry. And so there were like these you know, four pictures of people like on a Zoom call or whatever, and they're all just fascinated. They're all doctors or medical professionals, and they're all fascinated that, oh, and I can't believe we can sort of do this now online. And, you know, we've been in it like, really, is that a new thing for you? I mean, certainly it came on a lot more, but we were doing online meetings and meeting remotely and doing stuff for the longest time. But here's the thing. The healthcare industry is a great example of an industry that was so rocked by what happened this past year in how they operate and having to adjust to a new, more customer-centric experience. And what happened specifically with like meeting and doing telemedicine is that something that quite truly had been seen before this all started, before COVID, it was seen as You literally can't do it. It's just not even allowed. You can't. There's no way whatsoever to do it. And then almost overnight, a switch was flipped, and then suddenly it was the only way you could do it.
The only way.
And,
yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And so you know, you look at you know events that are held like networking events and these sorts of things. There are organizations that do that, and they had to move to online and remote and distance and so forth, and. One of the things that I noticed in a lot – I've been doing a lot of work with speaking of events and networking and so forth. They do a lot of moderating of webinars and lots of different industries across the whole CX discipline. And one of the things that I'm noticing is a common theme that it isn't so much about – identifying the perfect answer for any specific individual situation as much as it is being dynamic in how you deliver that.
Yes.
And
you're absolutely right.
You can think of it in terms, for example, people are talking about, oh, the new work environment. Everyone's working from home. And so what will the new normal be? Will everybody go back to the office? Will everybody stay at home? And the answer isn't which of those two is appropriate. The answer is building an employee environment that supports your employees to work wherever they want to work, right?
Exactly.
Whereas, you know, you think, you know, back when you were working internally in industry, there was a shift where everyone was going home, and then there was a shift where everyone was going back into the office. And it's like, well, instead of these shifts anymore, we're going to start supporting our organizations in such a way that they can work wherever they want. And that expands, of course, into the customer service and customer experience field as well, which is I just wrote an article this morning about how you know you can meet your customers on any channel that you want, but if the experience sucks, it really doesn't matter that you're able to tweet with them, you know. And it's about that dynamic delivery. It's about that dynamic delivery of the actual service, so much more than it is the way in which you do it, and. That goes back then to a fundamental, like it's practically like a Jim Collins type of thing from way back, if you remember. And that's the organizations that are really going to thrive in this new world as we enter 2021 now are going to be the ones that have really spent the last year concentrating on their core principles, their values, the problems they're trying to solve for their customers, and are thinking a little bit less about putting into place all the specific functions and channels and all these other things.
Yep.
When we start to think about what we do and what we deliver and how we deliver it, rather than the problems our customers are trying to solve, we're missing the bigger picture and we're missing the better way to serve our customers. And I think that something as radical as what happened last year has kind of jerked a lot of organizations back into reality to say, wait, here's the relationship we want to have with our customers. Here are the problems our customers are trying to solve. Here's the place within our customers' lives that we want to play a role rather than simply, hey, here's a widget we make or here's a service we provide.
Yeah.
Here's why our customers need something like what we offer. And then when you look at it that way, it really frees you up to cast away the old ways you used to do stuff. And it's like I said, it's those customers right now in January of 2021 who took the opportunity to reflect back on 2020 when everything was just haywire and say, okay, no, here are our core principles. Here's our North Star. Here's what's really important to us and how we want to relate to and relate with our customers. So what if we had to start it all over again and do it completely different? We'd still want to adhere to those, those core principles.
Yeah. Well, I have a great situation that just happened to me a couple of weeks ago. So I was ordering food from a restaurant for takeout, which I haven't done in COVID. I've just been eating at home, and I thought, well, it's the holidays, I'll go get this special meal. And
sure.
I started to call them, and they said, oh, by the way, and they're recording, you can order online. I'm like, oh, that kind of tells me you would prefer I do the ordering online. All right. So I go online, place my order, but I had a coupon. Nowhere to put in a coupon code, or because I didn't know it, behind the scenes, it's Instacart. And or whatever third party was, right. So I go there to get my food, think, well, I'll just, tell them I have a coupon when I get there, and they'll take it off my check. And she says, oh, sorry, this is all through a third party. You know, if you wanted to use your coupon, you had to call us directly. And I'm like, I tried doing that, and your recording kind of made me feel like I had to do it online. So even though they're surviving and found a way to still do what they do, now you have to think about the whole supply chain of, the full customer journey. So if you are outsourcing something, make sure it still works within the model that your customers are used to using. And, so I think I doubt that person that I talked to will have any kind of feedback for the restaurant, to say, oh, by the way, let's tell this third party to allow people to use coupons. But, so to your point, they're figuring it out. And they don't need to be the food delivery people or the online e-commerce element of the restaurant. But if you are outsourcing it, make sure that you're still able to, kind of continue servicing the customers in the way that they expect.
Yeah, and, I'd piggyback on that, Nancy, and I'd also say that it's also that responsibilities, that restaurant's responsibility to give a damn about it. Because so many times in a situation like that, the response, if you offer that feedback and say that instead of talking to, say, the person at the counter, when you go pick it up, if you were talking to the general manager or the owner of that restaurant, you would just say, hey, here's the thing. This was my experience and this is how it happened and this is why it wasn't ideal, that a lot of organizations will look at a situation like that and instead of seeing it from your perspective and saying, oh, well, Nancy, I can understand what you're saying, and maybe we ought to find a solution for that. What they'll say is, oh, yeah, well, that's because we outsourced that, and that's how Instacart works. Well, no, that's not the answer.
No, exactly.
I didn't bring this up just so that you and I could commiserate about how it's a bummer that Instacart works that way. What I meant was you need to find a way to make this.
If I spent this money to have acquired this coupon, then that means – you're encouraging me to come back to spend more money, and if I can't use the coupon, chances are I may not come back.
And it's not even that so much. It's a hassle. Another one of those situations where, like, hey, we really care about you coming and being our customer, but not so much that we would actually make it easy for you to operate.
Yeah. I wrote an article about the customer journey and the whole customer experience, and I use Amazon as an example because they've done a very good job of everything from if you're a Prime member, one-click order, to no shipping, to tracking your packages, to the fact that, you feel like when you get the package, even though you know what you ordered, you feel like you're opening a present. That whole thing is like, yes, my order's here, yay.
The package is smiling at you, Nancy.
Exactly.
A little logo,
So they've done a fantastic job of, the whole technology component of, making other suggestions or trying to cross-sell you, and a lot of people are trying to mimic that model, and it's just, but the whole process has to be thought through. And a lot of times I'll ask my clients in the call center space, do you ever make the executives make a call or take calls? they're not making a lot of money, those folks. And, have the executives once in a while take an inbound call or take an order or, answer something in social media and work, just dig through all of the feedback that you're getting in each channel. And do they, really understand not only the customer's point of view, but that employee's point of view, because they are sometimes the only interaction the customers are having with your brand. And putting yourself in their shoes for an hour or so would be very helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'd also say that and it's funny we were talking about Amazon, because the story, whether it's apocryphal or accurate, was that Jeff Bezos had actually done this. And I would say that there's also also value in placing the call the other way too, which is make sure your executives are calling into your customer support centers as well. There's nothing, and this is the sort of thing that I champion to my clients constantly. And I said, there is no better and more valuable way of experiencing and understanding what your customer's experiences is than to experience it yourself. And it's cheaper than surveys. It's easier to analyze than surveys.
Yep.
You know exactly what that feeling is like. Like I said, that's a great way to capture that voice of the customer by being a customer yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. And I get so frustrated sometimes when organizations have all of this data at their fingertips. They have all this information, but because they have sunk costs in some platform or technology or physical equipment, you know, they just see it as a way to, you know, say, well, you know, we already spent all this money on X, Y, and Z, you know, and our shareholders would just have a hissy fit if we did this or, went out and got more money for this or whatever. But if you look at the big picture, then, you know, you can't think of it in short term. You have to look at it for the long term. So I don't know if you have any examples of where you've helped implement a solution where you've had to help them overcome the issue of sunk costs or previous investments that aren't working.
Yeah, well, I'm currently working with an organization that's a membership model, and the idea is to kind of adjust it a bit to make it more of a monetary type of a thing. And what we're trying to determine is, well, what should be behind a paywall, what should be in front of a paywall? Because, you know, from a marketing perspective, you want to be able to bring people in and entice them a little bit and then say, oh, behind this curtain here, you're going to get even more stuff if you pay. And then there's all sorts of brilliant marketing people trying to determine what the right value and price should be on that. But more importantly, what we had to do was get a hold of some of the current members, some potential new members, and say, well, what would you want? What would be of value to you? And it's like an old Seinfeld joke that I always everything with me devolves to an old Seinfeld episode.
Okay.
And it's the old one where Kramer has his phone lines crossed with the movie phone, and so for a while he just starts answering the phone as if he's the recording telling you about the movies and what the show times are and everything. But he says, using your touch tone keypad, enter the first three letters of the movie you want to see. And of course, it's kind of like an IVR, right? You plunk in the numbers, and he doesn't understand what all those beeps sound like. Right? He's like, I don't know what movie it is. So he kind of guesses a couple times. And then he says, why don't you just tell me the movie you want to see? So it's a similar thing. It's like sometimes instead of overcomplicating what your customer's voice is, you just say, well, what do you want? You know, how are we failing? How are our competitors failing? What is it that you'd really need? We get so caught up in, you know, how likely are you to recommend this to a friend or family member, colleague, or blah, 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 and then trying to intuit from that some sort of statistical probability that somebody will buy again. Well, why don't you just say, would you buy again? Right? Why don't you just say, what would you like, what sort of improvements would you like to see made? You turn that around into action, because otherwise, if all you're doing is collecting it and you're not taking action on it, it's like having a dinner party and you say, well, this is what we're considering serving. Do you have any issue with that? And someone says, oh, I'm deathly allergic to that. And then just like serving it anyway. Thanks for asking.
Yes. I already bought the groceries, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, too bad. Yeah, I was just only asking out of courtesy. It's taking that, and that's what we're doing in this organization I'm currently working with, is we're taking those insights, and we're saying, oh, well, here, we thought that we would provide this, and this as services, you know, A, B, C, and D, but it turns out that they need, you know, J, K, and L instead. So we have to be humble and curious when it comes to collecting that voice of the customer. We don't have all the answers. We don't have all the knowledge.
Yeah.
And it, it's by listening to what our customers want, and then like I said, taking that humble approach to, okay, we're bought into, we're going to act on whatever we get from the customers within reason.
Right.
I mean,
right.
We're still going to play the same sort of role for the customers, but it's not easy. But it's also easier if you have that voice of the customer right in front of you to say, this is what they're saying. And we called 100 of them. We talked to 100 of them.
And
95
of
them said this is what they want.
Yeah. Yeah. And, instead of AI being artificial intelligence, sometimes I use it as actionable insights. You could look at AI in a completely different go right ahead. Because you said the term insights a couple of times, and now we're talking about putting them into action. So it's the new AI is what I call it, because our simulation software gives trainers much more data and insights to actually pinpoint exactly where somebody gets off track. They're not used to that because all the other tools in their toolbox just tell them that they checked the box of this person sat in on this class or downloaded this video and watched it. You don't know if they learned anything. Whereas, on the other hand, we actually can prove to you what they did or did not learn and where they're at within their range of skills and gives you the insight to, should I really put this person on the phone or in production? Maybe I shouldn't and, not take the risk of a bad customer experience.
Yeah. Well, Nancy, I mean, there's an analog to that, too. You're taking action on stuff, taking action on information rather than just collecting it and saying that's good, this is a theme that I see a lot of times too, is that sometimes customers aren't really the reason you're trying to get something done. You're not trying to solve their problems or help them with the job to be done, as they say. Instead, they're just simply part of a process. Okay, then the customer calls in, then you do this, then you do this, then you do this. And it's like, okay, was that customer was just like a cog in the machine. That customer wasn't really the goal of everything to satisfy and to solve this issue for this customer. All the customer is just another player, another part of a more elaborate process. And it's like, well, no, now we're losing track of the whole purpose of it.
Well, it's funny you say that because, when companies like Twitter and YouTube and Facebook and all those mega companies that have mega customers, it's the byproduct isn't really how you use the tool, right? The byproduct is all the data that they're going to get from you. So you are a cog in the, in the process.
That's obviously the whole design is on its head there because, like you're saying there, in that instance, the user of Facebook is the product, and that's a whole different episode there. I'm just
exactly that's a whole another wormhole that we could go down very very easily. It's like how do they make money? Well, they're not making money. People aren't paying for it. So kind of your current situation where it's kind of the freemium channel, then the paid channel, then the extra paid channel, and how much do you give at each of those stages within those offerings? And I was just downloading an animation tool today, and I'm like, wait a minute, this can't be $69 one time. I'm used to paying $69 every month for what I've been using. So, but it's, there's a lot of different options
out there. They're selling your information to somebody else.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the downside. It's like, do I care? is it worth paying the extra money per month to keep my information, or do I not care with what they're going to do with my information? So that's kind of the dilemma we all face on our end. But for my final question here, since this is the kickoff of the new year, where do you see kind of the wins for customer experience, coming into this new year?
I think that what we're going to see is a more trying to figure out the way actually to put it into words, and I'm trying to find a way to pitch this to the community without losing my executive card, lose my analyst card, lose my CX card, and my membership to all of these communities by saying that I think what we're going to see is a drive a little bit away from top-level metrics, we're going to see a drive a little bit away from what's your NPS, what's your CSAT, and more toward what are you doing with the underlying information and insights that you're getting from that customer feedback so that you can stand out by having taken action on that. The beauty of it is that at the end of the day, the NPS or the CSAT will improve if you do that anyway, but I think that there's going to be more of an appreciation for the subtlety behind it and an appreciation for doing something with it and then therefore, like I said, making your customers' lives better as a result. And that's harder to quantify as all.
Yeah, I think to end our note on our call on that is fantastic.
Sounds
I completely
like
agree with you.
I whipped them up.
You got them all fired up.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you joining us today, and you know, certainly would be valuable to have you on in the future as well. So I appreciate your time.
Yeah, definitely. Love to come back as well.
Okay. Well, have a happy new year.